What up, y'all? How y'all doing? Welcome to another episode of PA's Panic Room. You know this one's gonna be fire. You saw the label. You know who we talking to today. But before we get to him, you know I gotta delve into my comments. Some of y'all some ratchet ass motherfuckers. Y'all terrible. All right, this is from the Tammy Dior show. Y'all remember my girl Tammy, the co-host Tammy? All right. Gregory Diggs says, Pierre, you are too old to be wearing patent leather bred Jordans. Can you hate? I got these on too. You hating on these? I ain't doing. I wear what I want to wear, nigga. That's what we do here, okay? That's how we do. That's what we do. We wear what we want to wear, nigga. I got the money for them. You just mad you ain't had to connect, nigga, for them breads. That's what it is. That's all it is. Oh, hating ass, nigga. All right, this is the Killer Mike one. D-Train 147. I like that name already. Let's see what he got to say. Pierre, another straight fire show. Keep bringing that smoke and representing D.C. I'm proud of you, homie. I appreciate that, D-Train 147. See, I need more like this. I like these right here. All right. Next one is K. Kemp. This was on the Akon show. He says, Pierre, be quiet and let the guest talk. The man is highly intelligent and experienced. Pierre is a speed bump of distraction to the knowledge of Akon, to the knowledge Akon is dropping. Man, these motherfuckers are terrible. It's really, mother, you took the time out your day to worry about my motherfucking way I stop and talk? Well, this is my show. Say Pierre's Panic Room, so you're gonna hear from Pierre, nigga, okay? Damn, if you don't wanna hear, you got me fucked up. And on this show, you gonna hear from me too talking. The fuck y'all want me to be a mummy on this show? Get out of here. All right, y'all. I'm excited, man. This brother here, man, is on fire. One of my favorite comedians, favorite people, to be honest with you, man. I love this brother, man. We come up in the game. I was around a little before he was, as far as doing comedy from what I remember, but we'll talk about all that, man. A good brother, he's fire. When I say fire, every time you see him, he's fire, man. He has a loyal following. I'm gonna delve into some of the stuff, you know, how he grew up and where his mind is right now, man. He has one of the hottest specials out on Netflix. You know what it is. Give it up for the one and only Mr. Earthquake. Come on, y'all, give Earthquake some love, y'all. Give him some love. Yes, sir. Damn. All right, brother. All right. Woo. It was a little timing to get you. I had to work on getting you, brother. You're busy, man. But one thing I say, you didn't brush me off like some sucker MCs do and shit sometimes. You were just like, P, I'ma do it. I just gotta fit in my schedule. Yeah. And I fucks with that. And you answer my texts and my calls.
Of course.
I see niggas on the street all the time. I got you. I want to do Pierre's Panic Room. Hell yeah, I'm down for it. Call me. And I call and they don't call me back. They don't text me back. Nothing. I'm like, you some raggedy man. You know who you are. But I knew you weren't going to do this, brother. So I appreciate it, especially as hot and busy as you are to come here and talk with me on my show here in L.A. Let's delve into it. I know you're from Washington, D.C.
Southeast.
And you represented it well on your special. Now, let me ask you, when I grew up in D.C., Southeast was a rough place to grow up, brother. Yes. That was a rough, rough motherfucking spot right there, homie.
Yes, it was.
Woo-wee!
But it was beautiful.
But you found beauty in that roughness, brother?
Yes.
Okay.
It played well for me. It allows you to get what we're doing with now. You know what I mean?
I was going to get to that. Because a lot of hustlers came out of D.C. Especially Southeast. Yes, big time ones. All right, so you grew up, tell me your family dynamics. With your mother, your brother, sister, how's your family dynamics?
I have three brothers, one sister. I was raised by my aunt, which, you know, mother, sister, and we lived in Condon Terrace.
Ooh.
My brothers and, over in.
Let me tell you something, anything that says Terrace in D.C. back in the day, you ain't want to fuck with, okay?
Yeah.
A little rough. So you didn't want to go in there. Listen, you could be there. If you're from there, you're cool.
Yeah.
If you come to any terrace, that's a or farms.
The circle.
Right, the circle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Count what you got to do, circle around, get it, go back up the hill.
What do you remember about your youth, about being a kid playing around in D.C., you know, just the vibe, the music? How was it growing up, you know?
I mean, just go-go, man. My friends went to school with me that was a part of Red Essence. So Dave, White Boy.
DC, White Boy, yeah.
DC, Funk, the Max.
All right, but that's got to be in your teenage years, okay?
Yeah.
Because, all right, I want to go back. I'm talking about just growing up as a little kid. I want to see what sparked the comedy and the whole situation for you. So being a kid in D.C., 6, 7 years old, because do you remember I'm a little older than I am, the Martin Luther King riots, did it affect you, D.C.?
No, not at all. I was sheltered from that part of it because, you know, My mother worked in the government, man, and we was, you know, when she was raising me, it was me. So I really occupied it myself a lot until I started hanging with my brothers and when I got older, like 10, 11, 12.
Okay, and your brothers are how much older than you?
Each one of them is 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah, my oldest brother is 2 years. My youngest brother is 4 years under me. Then my next to me is two. I have Tyrone, Terrence, what we call Butter Ball, and Marcel.
Okay, okay.
And a sister. We all 2 years apart.
Was your sister tough? Did you want to fight
she
your sister?
She was the best one. She was beat everybody.
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
She was the only one kept my older brother off.
Oh, really?
Called her Tawana.
Right.
She was the only one keep him off.
Where was your father?
My father was out here making babies.
Okay, like many.
He was there, but I was lucky enough to be raised by my uncle and my aunt. So
being hurt, your mother's side.
My mother's sister.
Okay, yeah, on their side.
She, you know, my mother told her she couldn't bring another kid in her house.
So right.
Of course, as family members, hold my son till I get on my feet.
Okay.
That's how I got over.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. So what I remember about D.C., man, like, I remember, you know, I came to D.C. from Germany in 79. Mm-hmm. I just remember, like, just the camaraderie amongst black people. We'd go to Rock Creek Park and stuff like that.
Yes,
you know, you remember
Haynes
that?
Point.
Yeah, Haynes, well, a little later for Haynes Point. Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember that dynamic of, you know, we just go on picnics, man. Remember getting the back of the car? I don't know if you did that. Getting the back of the park to go to Haynes Point, whatever park we was going to, Rock Creek Park, and you know, sodas and uncles and dancing and all that kind of stuff. You grew up around that kind of feel too, or would your family?
Well, we didn't make that much travel because we didn't have a car.
Oh wow!
So we didn't get a car until my brother got about 19. He was the first one to have a car on my brother's side. So we more or less had like cookouts around the neighborhood. And the only time we had all that is when we had like family reunions.
Right.
But more like just strike up the grill, everybody from the neighborhood come around, and we ate that way.
But we
didn't do too many, you know, going down to see. I personally, to be quite honest with you, I never knew the significance of what D.C. was till I was older. Because we never was into.
When's it older? What's older mean? 1920 type of
thing? Shit, damn near.
1920?
Yeah. Right. Was.
So were you a precocious kid? Was you fighting and all that niggas and shit? DC niggas go with them hands, man. I could fight, but
I had to fight because I got brothers that could fight.
Oh, well, okay. Well, somebody had good hands in that house.
Yeah, sister, my brother's good, man. My older brother, Butterball, was good with it. Tyrone was good with it. Marcel definitely was good with it.
Right.
So all of us was good with it, but you only fought, man, because, you know, people got out of pocket with it. But most people knew you could fight, and there's nobody, you know, messing with you, wasn't fucking with you. Because, you know, you ain't want to fight, because even if you win, you lose. Your hand hurts, always lose. So people that can really fight, it's the last thing you're looking to do.
When did you go to the service? When did you go to the Air Force? What year?
I think 81, 82.
So you were before the crack era. You left before crack really hit.
Yeah, I left when it just started to come out, man. As soon as I graduated, I walked from off the stage and walked straight into the military.
What made you pick Air Force over something else, like Army? A lot of people from the Army, Marines.
They had the less physical requirement.
They only ran
a mile and a half.
Really?
Yeah. I said, that's where I want to go.
That's what you want to do?
Yeah, because the Marines had to run like 11 miles.
Okay.
And I wasn't getting on no boat.
Right.
Came over here, so that was out.
Right.
So, and then the Army ran, I think, back at that time, 7 or 8. But the Air Force was the closest shit to a civilian job out of all the military.
Right, sure.
So when I seen that, I said, this is where I wanted to go.
Okay. Let me go a step back. Look, because I'm from, grew up in D.C., were you either a Redskin or a Cowboy fan? Because you had to be one of those, player.
And I would never be a Cowboy.
Definitely. What the? Man, come off the show, man. Let's get the show out of
the
shit up.
Plan for
what?
Nigga that's a Cowboy fan from D.C. is a sellout.
Turn the microphone.
Some nigga, some Redskin fucked their girl and they never have forgave
them.
You understand? They didn't get love from their parents because the game was on and they ignored them. So they had to find a team. This is the way they get back at their parents.
Damn.
You got a lot of Cowboy fans that never left that D.C., ain't never been to Texas. More or less Dallas.
You true. All right. I'm right. Right, motherfucker. Damn. Yeah. Damn. Shit. Okay. You're a little rough on us. But no, I used to be a Cowboy fan until about 1991. And I was like, man, whatever. But I felt like when you were in D.C., you had to be the Redskin or Cowboy fan.
Yeah.
Like, what? Well, it was what it was. So.
My brother is a turncoat.
Is it a turncoat?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Slipped
yeah. But once they got Jerry Jones, I stopped fucking with him, man. That dude was a little...
He was the best thing we ever had.
Yeah, was he
we Jerry Jones? We love Jerry Jones.
Wow, really?
Oh, he's great.
Oh, wow.
Please let him stay the GM and everything.
Oh, shit.
Please.
Speaking of something that people outside of D.C. don't understand, and then let me ask you, because you got to be from D.C. to really understand it. What do you think it was the reason that we love Marion Barry so much, man?
I mean, he was a great man. I mean, he gave back to the community. He had summer jobs.
True that.
He had affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
He instituted the free lunch program, early pre-K program. Yeah, he got high, but who hasn't? You know what I'm saying? Who hasn't, goddammit? Now, if we're going to bring up, I'd rather have a motherfucker getting high doing something for people than a motherfucker ain't robbing the people.
Speaking of, come on now.
So, yeah, he was a man of it. And see, I'm from D.C. You don't tell us who we should have.
There you go.
We decide. So, a lot of people would never understand how we still voted for Marion Barry.
Second term.
Even though a second term that he was getting hot, which it was a setup.
Right. Come on, man. Come on. Come on.
Goddamn cocaine. That's the American way.
Come on now.
So I'm sitting here because they set him up.
Because TMZ caught an L when they tried to call him the crack mayor died.
Yeah.
Niggas went off on TMZ. They had to pull that down and apologize.
You goddamn right. I mean, you don't do that too. Oh, he's an alcoholic.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
so
right.
Don't take advantage of the man for his addiction, right. But look at the deeds of his work.
Right.
And it showed. And that's why. And we, D.C., we don't follow other people's rules.
There you go.
Man. If that man is good to us and he did what is and he apologized and he going to get help, he shouldn't lose his job.
Well, and a lot of people didn't want to hear and listen. If you watch the tape, when he has that crack pipe, he asked her, how do you use this?
Yeah.
A crackhead would know how to use it.
Yeah.
So he asked her, how do you, now what I will say was, Mary Barry chased that bullseye.
Well, ain't nothing wrong with that.
Chase that
monkey.
What's
wrong with going with God? Is what you damn here for?
Is that what he did?
Yeah, a woman. Heterosexual man got to stop being targeted.
I love it. But yeah, that's why some people outside of D.C. don't understand. Like, why you let him back again? I said, man, shut up. You got to be from D.C. to understand. And you said it eloquently. He helped out. He got a lot of programs for the black people.
Man.
He was one of the first ones to tell, because he was down with, I think he was out in South Carolina, somebody. SNCC, he started with SNCC and John Lewis. And they sent him to D.C., Mary Barry, to change around because a lot of D.C. people, the white folks, had the jobs. Mm-hmm. And they would go out the weekend, they'd go to Virginia or Maryland and stuff. And Mary Barry said, no, we got people who live right here. Black folks, they need jobs. Mm-hmm. And when he came in about maybe 77, 78, whatever he came in, he flipped that shit around.
Yeah.
And it was about damn near 70% black people were in the government.
Yes, he
now,
did.
They might have some minor jobs, but he said, no, you're going to work in the government. You live right here, too. We're not going to let them jobs go outside.
Exactly.
And the white folks were mad as hell at him, too.
Hell yeah, he was mad about it.
Yeah.
And they had to get him.
And he did a beautiful job with that. Were you known as a Joner, capper, snapper? That's what they call us around. You talking about?
No, I was all right. My brothers are better than I.
Really?
So when you got older brothers, they done already set precedents that you don't have to do shit. So we have older brothers, but nah, my brother Tyrone was the best at it. But we snap.
Right.
We Joner each other. Yeah. But I was precise with mine.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Now forward back to the talking about the Air Force. You had a little bit of like a Muhammad Ali moment.
What you mean?
You didn't want to fight the white man or the brown man or something. You said, I ain't fighting that over there, nigga. You got me fucked up. I'm here to wash dishes.
I mean, just like the inner city, I picked my fights. You got to understand, it was the, first of all, I was at the end of my enlisting.
Enlisting, okay.
Yeah, so they did what they call stop loss. Stop loss is where they keep anyone that has significant or major jobs that was wartime jobs, they can, by that long ass contract you signed, you needed a lawyer, you see what?
Really?
An act of Congress, they keep you from getting out.
Okay.
So if people don't understand about the first war was, the reason why we went Desert Storm is because Saddam Hussein went into Kuwait to take the oil.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't give a fuck how much oil he took. I ain't even have a car. So that ain't my fucking fight. You better send BP over that bitch. Okay. Exxon. That ain't my fight. Okay. I joined the military to go to school. I could have stayed in D.C. to get shot at.
Hell no. Now, hell no.
I just feel this is my time to get the fuck out.
Right, right.
You need a real soldier.
Right, right.
I was just acting as a soldier.
Oh, shit.
I don't mind practicing for
right,
war.
Right, right, right.
But when the shit pop off, nigga, I have to have a reason
right.
to go over there. Because now, you know, I'm a historian buff, and it's usually just all like all the brothers that, you know, that went to fight in Vietnam. They lost their life, and then 10, 15 years later, you do a peace treaty with them, and now they're your motherfucking ally. Now, mm-hmm. the motherfuckers have died in them rice paddles,
mm-hmm.
them rice patties, mm-hmm. and all on their gay day life. Now, these motherfuckers is your number one friend. Send your ass over there to fight.
You know or your kids.
Oh, your kids.
You're right,
exactly.
Right.
I came here to get an education and go to college.
Now, you the one starting the shit, right? I ain't starting nothing over here.
And I don't give a fuck if you take oil.
Damn.
I mean, really? I mean, I don't have a car.
Right, right, right. Okay.
Fuck,
okay.
I'm fighting for something that ain't my interest.
Well, you got some nice cars now. Would you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Now you want them oil prices down?
No, I'm cool. Because if you shouldn't buy the car if you can't afford the gas.
Oh my God. These niggas here with the price of much. You know, tripped me out on Instagram for the last 2 years. They've been posting eating steak and lobster. Now the gas went up 60 cents. They like, they can't even eat no more.
It's having a stroke.
Hell yeah! Oh my God.
Goddamn.
Oh
my God. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
All right. So when you got out of the service, is that when you got the comedy stand up comedy bug? Or was it
people ask me all the time about this. This decision was just the best decision that day. Tried it out, and nothing better came along. I didn't have no epiphany or what the other comedians had seen another comic. Like,
right,
that's
right.
What I want to do.
Right.
Tried the shit. They gave me some money for it, and another job hadn't came since they could beat the price.
Hell no. You kept on running from there.
Yeah, it's been there ever since.
I think I'm the only comic that wanted to be famous. You niggas like, it was a dare. I was drunk one night, went on stage. No, nigga, I wanted to be famous, nigga. I did not want to work a regular job, and that's why I got into stand-up comedy.
See, that's the focus I never had.
Oh, really?
No, that's the light-skinned nigga, bro.
Well, ain't that about a bitch?
Because good-looking niggas. See, big niggas, niggas that look all right, man. We just go ahead and wake up today and say, this is what we ain't going to do.
Right.
And hope something good come along. And that's what it was for me.
Right. Well, okay, by the time I caught up with you, you was on the club in Atlanta in Buckhead, man. I was like, damn. And I, you know, and to me, I was like, how does a comic own a comedy club? Now, Steve Harvey did one, I get that, but he was kind of big.
Yes,
you weren't as big as Steve Harvey at the time you owned the club. And I'm like, so what, how many trips you taken down to Mexico and back, you know?
No, it wasn't that. What happened was the Comedy Act Theater,
right?
Which the owners were
Michael Williams
and the other dude, his brother. Mm-hmm. Promise, you know, because back in Atlanta during that time,
early 90s,
if you told anybody black that you was a comedian, first thing, hey, when you gonna be performing at the Comedy Act?
Uh-huh.
Like, that's the only thing that will validate. And I was doing main white rooms, man, mm-hmm. coconut runs,
oh, wow.
down, uh-huh. you know, doing the comedy zones mm-hmm. and all of those. And so the owner told me, yeah, I'm gonna let you open up for Paul Mooney.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm gonna let you open up for Paul Mooney. I told all the women I was fucking with, now you wanna see a comedian, I'm gonna be at the Comedy Act, come on.
Hell yeah.
So I came up there and told him what time, you know, came up on Thursday to the club and said, hey man, what time you need me here Friday? So I don't be late for Paul. He said, I ain't tell you you can open for Paul. I said,
what?
I said, that's a damn lie. I didn't. Paul don't have nobody open for him, and we only put people up there because Paul do too. And I said, man, you did. I said, I told all my friends.
Oh, wow.
I ain't tell you that you was going to open up. And to this day, it's my good friend because he stood up for me. Sherman Golden.
Shout out Sherman.
Sherman Golden. He said, yeah, you did. You did tell him that. I said, you did. So he banned both of us from the club.
Wow.
Him for standing up for me. And for me, try, you know,
stand for yourself.
I cussed his ass out.
Okay.
So I called my mother and I was like, man, I'm supposed to be doing this club and everything. And this motherfucker didn't even do it like he said. And my mother gave me that DC love she always. She said, what did I tell you? You can't get mad at somebody for not doing something for you. mm-hmm. that you can't do for yourself, or you won't do for yourself. Mm-hmm. So if he not gonna allow you to perform at his club, you need to get your own club. Mm-hmm. What the fuck you talking about? You need money to open up a club.
Sure.
She said, those are your options. What the hell else you want me to do? So from that day on, I went and found investors, and Gary Abdo was doing little spots mm-hmm. or white clubs. He was a comedian too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he booked me, and he was the MC and I was the closer. I said, man, instead of you doing these old spots, we need to get a club. So I took him to the Comedy Act Theater. I said, look at this club, man. Got 400 people in here, three waitresses. They use the same comedians for the whole month. They just said, and it's in a bad fucking neighborhood. Tell you, man, we can make a killer. So I went to go try to look for the money, went through all the athletes. They gave you that bullshit, like you said. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nigga, I got you. It's a good ass motherfucker, I do. Call my people, have my people call your people, call them people. Motherfuckers, I'm gonna answer the phone. One dude, I forgot what athlete I told. His people just was honest with me. Man, he tell people he gonna do shit every time.
Damn.
Man. He ain't gonna know. Don't call back here. It's a waste of time. Gary found a plastic surgeon that would invest in us, but he said he needed to see, show that we knew what we was doing. So we went and got Chris DePetta, who owned the Punchline, mm-hmm. and we brought him in for his expertise of having a club, and we did a couple of spot dates and flipped the first $20,000 they had and show we made a profit on it. So he gave us the other $500,000 for that to open up the club.
Wow.
So since Comedy Act was downtown, kind of in the bad area on there, and black people wasn't going to Buckhead at that time.
Right.
I named it Uptown, and that's how we started.
Wow, okay. Yeah, because that was probably, that just surprised me that you had that club. That club was popping off the rip, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you something I appreciated that you did for me. And, you know, I know Gary. We know Gary now. Gary's a cool guy with me. But I remember I was supposed to come to do the show, and I had X amount for the week, and you paid me so X amount of money in a hotel, and you said, we'll fly you out. I said, cool, thanks. And I talked to Gary. Gary's like, we ain't flying you out. We don't want to fly you out. I said, no, Earthquake said it. Quake said that you can fly me out. He said, we ain't say that. I said, talk to Quake. Hold on 1 second. I wait on the phone for about 5 minutes because you was in the office. All right, let's see when we flying you out. I said, damn, thank you, Quake, shit. I always remember, it might be small to you or whatever,
no,
but
wasn't
I remember.
Small. I mean, it was constant battles. Just like, you know, I had a couple battles because Gary was, he wasn't astute on urban comedy.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Because I remember it was a battle to get T.K. Kirkland.
Oh, wow.
And okay. I don't want that kind of filth and this and that. I said, let me ask you something. Are you selling the tickets or are you buying the tickets?
Ooh. God damn, homie.
Ain't nobody come to see you, Otis.
Yeah. Right.
We in the business. This is for the clientele. Right, right. Not for your personal taste. Yeah. I mean, he fired Chris Tucker. Because Chris kept in the fence. Chris kept coming in late. Right. Coming in the late, not respecting him. But I made sure that he paid Chris for the whole week. Right. You know what I'm saying? Even if you're going to fire him, you're still going to pay him for the whole time, but we worked that good. It was
right.
Good.
But just interesting. He was strictly business, and I think you understood human beings better.
No, he was the type of person that was looking at it from a point of how do I expand this, you know, bigger into a conglomerate on it. You know what I mean? He was more on that point, the business aspect of it. Mm-hmm. The only reason I wouldn't say business, why? Because to be business, you must know the product that you're selling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Yeah. You got to know the nuances of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And you know that wasn't his forte. That's what Bynes was.
That's what you. Okay. And I felt like it was a place where you would come, which is your club. You know, you would constantly work because you'd work on the weekends at the comedy club. If you weren't working that weekend, you just host the damn club. But you did the dirty shit that Steve Harvey did. You damn near outshunned the comedians that was working on the show. Nigga, you tore it up for like before they got on. Yeah, no breather. Nigga, the feature couldn't follow you. Why you was like that, man?
Well, you gotta understand, when I first opened up my comedy club, the Comedy Act Theater told all black comedians if they was to work my club, they can't work the Comedy Act.
Damn. Really?
So none of them would come work my club. So I had to do all the time.
Makes perfect sense.
So that was a blessing in disguise. So when you have to do all the time and you have repeat customers, you can't keep on, it just made you sharper.
Okay.
And so if you, a lot of people think I'm drunk, when I lay on the back of the stage and just lay on it, it's just, that's how I started, because I just lay on the back of that motherfucker and rock for 2 hours.
There you go.
And then bring another comic on, and it wasn't until Steve Harvey came and said, fuck him, I do your club. And yes, well, nobody wouldn't do it. So I called Steve. Steve said, fuck them, I come. And he came in and showed me, sold that motherfucker out. He did a 6, 8, 10, 12 Ooh. On Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Right.
We cut him a check, and this is 93, about 57,000.
Damn.
I said, I didn't even know this kind of money was in this motherfucker.
Hell yeah.
God damn it, I'm going to work on mines. I'll tell you, you know, the 1500 was it, because we never had no comedian we paid more than 2,000, 3,000. Never seen nobody walk out with 57,000. So that's when I looked at his deal and seen 90% of the door, this and that, and the whole nine. I say, okay, that's how it's done. That's how it's done. So once he sold out all of those shows, and people came to see him, but they saw me, and that kicked it off. And then we was popping after that. And then when the Comedy Act actually closed, then we was the only club in it. It was really great.
Nice. Yeah. No. I remember that.
Yeah, it was great.
I feel like you got it out the mud, you know, your success. You really was grinding, like you said, doing them white clubs. Because do you feel that you cheat, like now people come see Earthquake, you know, whatever. But when you're doing a white club, they don't know you. Did you feel like you had to be a little different before them folks?
No, not really. I think you had to be more structured. You know what I mean? 10 minutes is 10 minutes.
Okay.
5 minutes is 5 minutes.
They told you
minutes,
right.
But yeah, and all that time. And back then, you couldn't be as loose as we are now.
Okay.
You know, they monitor your profanity. Damn sure couldn't go nigga.
Right.
Then it was during that time where the headliner looked over your show before you could do it. Don't talk about this.
Don't talk about that.
Talk about that. Well, motherfucker, what do you want me to talk about? And so it's on that. But the benefit, if I would have stayed in that, you know, it would have accelerated my career, because you in the system.
You said the thing, nigga. I have a problem with saying, I don't know why, I mean, you might say why, but like saying nigga in front of all white crowds, you know, like from the comedy club. Back then, did you do it, or you had a problem with it? Because now, I mean, you who you are, because they come see you.
Held it back. I mean, when you... Of course you don't do it. You don't put the flavor on them. It's more for me. Back then it was more like hospital food compared to a soul food restaurant.
Okay.
Same chicken, but it ain't had that much seasoning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it on just because you're constituents. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you at. But once after Def Jam happened and we was mainstream, shit was on.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't no reason to go back over.
Then you got hooked up with The View with Whoopi Goldberg. She picked you out of everybody to do a set.
Yeah.
On there. Did that do something different for your career?
Honorable mention.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
It didn't do what you know what I thought that maybe it had the possibility to do.
But The View ain't your audience either.
Yeah, but it should. I think that it still should have had a viewership. Somebody could see if he's able to do. Let's see what he's able to do in his own. You know, it's just, I tell people all the time, you just got to keep grinding since what we do is subjective. You know, what's funny to somebody ain't funny to another person.
Right.
You just got to keep grinding until you make the right person laugh.
But, you know, you're a favorite of a lot of people. And some people, I didn't even really realize that you were that much, you know, favorite. I don't know everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Eddie Murphy really took you on. I think he kind of... Trying to help you get a deal or something? Am I mistaken by that?
No, I mean, Eddie was just a fan of mine. We never got into, he did put me in front of, to get in, to be seen for that movie Eddie Griffin had. The one about the, Dave Chappelle was in.
Undercover Brother.
Undercover Brother, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And to read the part for Smart Man or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I bombed 1,000 definitions.
right. Okay.
That
okay,
one right there and on that point of it. But
do you think that your you need to work on your acting skills, or do you think acting was a thing at the time?
No,
you
needed not just understanding the concept of it. I mean, I got this now. I mean, but it's still, I'm not an actor, man. I'm a movie star. So
damn, I have to. Faith.
Yeah.
There's a difference between those two.
Yeah, it's a difference.
Yeah.
You're looking for something to enhance what you already bring. You know what I mean? And that's what it is. Had I known that, if I could have talked to myself then, is show them the same person in that room that they see on the stage. Instead of trying to be something that I think they want me to be.
That's true.
And then that confusion of trying to play that person, brings in a non-authentic person.
Right, sure,
that
sure.
You're putting yourself in the same category with motherfuckers who's been studying acting all their life.
No.
That's like you, me and you right now, we play flag football, but nigga, we can't go out here and playing the Super Bowl.
Right.
That whole time. So you need to play your game in that game and hope someone recognize that and highlight that. Because if you look at any of people that superstars on our level, which I mean by comedy, all they doing is enhancing who they were in a fictitious movie.
I think a lot of times, the problem with comedians trying to be actors is we're so used to doing monologues and not dialogue. And so we don't know when to pause or take a break or something. We feel like if we hear silence, some problem, as I told comics a lot of times, when you're on a show and you're doing a club and it's quiet, they're listening. That means it's good. It's not a bad thing. But we're so, as a black crowd, because black people are like, nigga, you may be funny, every joke, but it'd be like, you come out so bam, 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 bam. I've seen some comics like Chappelle. He'll take a while, sit there and chill shit,
I wish I could.
You're like, damn. Right, the pressure is so crazy. So maybe, I'm not saying with your acting, I don't know how it was, but I think sometimes comics are trying to instead of relax, and take a pause,
Right.
And
it's definitely a different muscle. Right.
It is.
It's the different ones, but mine's that too is true too. But you also lose the identity who you are. You can slow it up. Say, now I see it. You know what I mean? This is how it need to be delivered. It's a skill.
Yeah, you can still have the ferocity of the words, but you gotta learn how to pause too.
Exactly.
I remember doing some of the hip hop movies I did. And a couple of actors, rest in peace, AJ Johnson. He was trying to work. He was doing a stand up in our scenes at times. And I was like, oh, you don't have to have the last word. Sometimes he would snap. I could say, are you going home? Like, yeah. And I'm like, I'll see you tomorrow. And he'd say, okay. But he'd be like, okay, your white ass, or just he'd add some bullshit to it. I'm like, dude, you're just trying to snap, nigga. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so I think a lot of times because we're so used to being by ourselves on stage, getting all the energy and the love that we feel like every line, we forget it's a partnership.
True.
You listen, you talk. You listen, you talk.
So conversation.
Conversational with that. That's cool. Let me go back, because since now you're talking to your whole nother level. What is your favorite places to perform, venues wise? A comedy club, a theater, or an arena?
I love a comedy club.
Yeah, me too.
Because that's where I write. You know what I mean? Arenas, definitely.
15,000 people.
Yeah, arenas, definitely. And theaters, also. There's no place to play. You know what I mean? I myself, personally, you don't play there. Because you don't want to lose 15,000 people.
Ooh.
You don't want to lose 4,000 people. So
you can lose 200,
300? 200, I'm strong enough.
Get them back.
To control 200.
Right.
You understand? I can cut, but it's too many when you talk about 4,000, so that is not to be played with.
Right.
Too many motherfuckers I see in arenas and theaters are too casual fucking with it, and they dealing with fire, because if you fuck around and lose them,
right,
them booze gonna come hard than a motherfucker.
Right.
And so I don't play when it comes.
You know, it's funny you say that. When I do a comedy club, I feel like I can talk and be me. I don't have to be like, you ever have a girl? When you're in an arena, you ever see a girl walk down the street? That's not how I normally talk, but you're trying to fill that whole 15,000 seat up, you know what I'm saying? So I agree with you. As far as me, I'd rather have a comedy club, 300 people packed up, crunched up with me all around me, Cause I can, it's a, it's right, it's right
intimacy.
Here. Right, the intimacy, right. And I thought I can talk and, you know, and if I bring extra energy, it's way, true. Fills that room up way, you know, big time, opposed to having to do that.
I mean, for me, mm-hmm. you know, the comedy club now is what my open mic was.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the process is plan get it right at the comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
So it's perfected for the theater.
Mm-hmm.
In the arena.
Mm-hmm.
So didn't have to go to, you know, open mic or a spot mm-hmm. right mm-hmm. here. I got 6-7 goddamn shows in North Carolina, say Charlie Goodnight's.
Mm-hmm.
By 7 shows, man, I'm sharp. All these things done. It's back to back, hitting it on here.
Yes.
Now I take this out, I put this in, and you can play with it, and it's there.
How do you handle not having a good show? You do so many of them. Does it still get to you? You say, hey, man, that's part of the game. I'm going to move on.
Nah.
No?
I don't never want to accept less than my back. It carries with me. Because once you start to accept it, then you're going to accept it.
That makes sense.
Then you're going to wake up in the morning like, how in the fuck I got here?
Mm-hmm.
Deteriorating, people coming to see you. And lackluster of what you used to be. Mm-hmm. You just don't. So, you know, I take it very personal. Mm-hmm. And I do. I mean, bad mm-hmm. shows, mm-hmm. we ain't having back to back.
I know that's right. How do you get yourself up mentally, or what do you do when you do? I've seen you on some big concerts with some heavy hitters, you know, the big dogs, the Lavelles and the Samoas and all them, you know, DC Curry and all them. How do you get your mind together or work? Or what do you think of? What goes through your mind when you have to follow all that? When you're the last comic of all that smoke and all that heat in front of you? It fucks some comics up.
Yeah, that's why I don't come until they call my name.
I know, that's right.
I don't need to see you. I right. don't watch other comics. I come in there and I do me. And if you sit there and listen to them, and you sit there and you start analyzing the severity of what it can, it's too, no. Walking that motherfucker just like Jay-Z for Madison Square. Give me my money, send me the stage, and I'll go up and do what you was gonna do if you was first. You know what I mean? But you gotta understand who you behind. Like, for me, if I could get behind a hyper person like Arnaz,
mm-hmm.
I know right then and there, ain't no bullshit. Cause he just jumped all the way across the stage, and this motherfucker,
flipping
this nigga done flipped, and that hands around his neck. He ain't playing,
right,
but
right.
He doing the motherfucker. He killing it.
Right.
You understand? The other one standing right there, right. That motherfucker. Then it's lyricists versus lyrics.
Right.
But you looking at this trampoline motherfucker right, just going funny. On, and it is on, so you have to bring the energy to ride that wave, and then you have it. You sit there on there, you can find yourself in some trouble.
It's funny you said you get your money, then you go. Do you still ever run into problems with promoters? I know you're on another level,
I stopped. I didn't have a problem with a promoter and shit. I've been in the game, what, 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
I ain't had a problem with a promoter in 29.
Damn.
I never. I never lose my leverage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
50% before right. I come. All of the rest of the other 50 before I tell a nail joke.
I'm saying what? Yeah.
I had many motherfuckers calling my name. They calling you. We got it. Right, you right. got it. But right. for me to get up there, I need that.
Right, sure,
so
sure.
So you leave that. You hate to do that to the MC and the rest of them right. sitting up there. They call your name. He got offended your joke. We got to count this motherfucker money out.
Mm-hmm.
But now I deal with established promoters now later in my career. That understand that, but nah, man, I tell comedians all the time, man, no joke is told until you get all your money.
That's real. That's
and
real.
If you don't get, you lost your leverage. You done already performed, now you looking for him to pay.
I don't even like promoters to be heeing and hawing and let me see. You know, I'm in the town, I'm in your city, nigga. You ain't got this money yet, brother? I should get paid when we should get paid when we get to the venue. What you think? I'm gonna run away from it, get the money, and then to go haul that back to my hotel?
That's what I demand. I just stay in my motherfucking dressing room.
I know that's right.
He'll come to me. He gotta come because they about to call my name, and I ain't moving until you give me my money. And if we paying in cash, how they in the bags for the other half? And I gotta count all that motherfucker.
Ain't that about a bitch? Ain't that some real shit?
No, it's cool. Because I know. If, me being the headliner, you got to drop dead time. You got to hard out. So, nigga, yeah. I'm getting my money late, right. And you getting less work.
Right.
I posted did 45. You late now, it's down to 30.
Right, right.
You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Because right.
You got the, you don't want to pay that fee right. For the late fee. So I take my time.
No, that's interesting. That's interesting. So, all right. So let's talk about what's really going on. I mean, you talking about what you do, big as you are, and people walking on stage. Well, come on, man. A DC nigga would have did what?
Oh, man.
Come on, you ain't got to say that. Not you did it. What would a DC nigga?
Now, I would do the same thing he did.
Right, I would get paid. I'm saying, people say, what do you do, nigga? I'm like, I would have done the same thing.
Same thing he did because, yeah. You know, and I said I wasn't going to talk. But, nigga, you already been slapped. So... Can't get the slap back.
Right, right.
You know what I'm
it's
saying? So all you can do now is be compensated for the slap.
There you go.
You know
there
what I mean? Go. And that's the end of the story on that part.
You know, the ignorant niggas that I know is like, oh, the whoop you got out of the first, and to do what? You fought them to prove to what? The two ignorant niggas up there acting foolish in front of the world? Could not one of them take the higher road after the slap already happened without
every
being a sucker?
Every nigga that said that they would have went on and whooped the nigga ass. In my humble opinion, would have never been in that position because they wouldn't have been hosting.
Watch out now.
Hosting watch out Oscars. Because you, to be in that position, you must have made great decisions to be in
come
that
on now.
Position.
Come on now,
you're
I like
making
that.
You're an ignorant position at open mic.
Right.
You would never make it.
There it is now.
To, to make great decisions.
Somebody speaking the truth up
at there. The fucking Oscars. So you would never be a presenter at an Oscars if that was your mindset. For you to be fighting at the Oscars with this man
online. They talking about,
online,
getting, they talking about
saying?
Getting slapped at the Hot Wing joint. That's yeah, what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Okay, at Hot yeah. Wing with over damn exactly. Channel. Somebody changing the channel of the game and shit.
Exactly.
Yeah, that time, you might slap him and get into a fist fight, but at the Oscars, you was a fool for that, man.
That man showed you. I'm so glad he taught me, personally, if I'm ever, God forbid, I'll be in that situation, but how to handle it at that point. Because the professionalism... And your options are all open. If you slap them and throw them back, you're limited in options.
Come on now. Come
your
on.
Your
come on,
options
brother.
Are limited. You don't have the people sentiments
right.
Among
on,
the
now.
People, nor do you have the financial gain if you want to go that way.
And, so, and to me, when you say I'd have fought him back, not you, but somebody say I fought him back, to prove what? To who? That you's a cold-blooded nigga? First of all, you don't get out of a 20-person radius all year long, nigga, okay? No one want 20 people know your mucky ass and shit, you know what I'm saying? And to prove to who? Another nigga sitting at home in Chicago or Detroit or Mississippi or something that you's a bad motherfucker. He's an ignorant motherfucker.
I don't even have conversation with them type of people
ooh.
Because
yeah, well, they my inbox.
I believe in choices
okay.
Is choices and okay. Great decisions are great decisions.
Mm.
Chris has made all great decisions in his life and that was another one. These people that you're talking about haven't and they wouldn't even get to that point.
That's not good.
To get the opportunity to do that.
Okay, okay. I give you props. Well, you're a level-headed man. So here's a question. And I'm being, you know, saying this in a respectful way. I've seen you do a lot of stuff, brother. Really, so top of the line stuff. You've gotten yourself from the mud to where you are. You're one of the top comedians. You've been working for a long time. What is it do you feel that's not clicking that you ain't where you want to be? There's a level you want to be that you may think of. Let's be honest. There's a level.
I'm where I want to be.
Exactly where you want to be?
Of course. God would put me wherever. What kills me about my people, motherfuckers, is I never needed nobody to validate my success.
Okay.
My peers do that every day. Mm-hmm. When I watch them on there, and I'm like, hey, motherfucker, so I don't need a TV show, a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love my special, but this is what I've been doing the whole time. Success is within yourself. I think a lot of people feel that you need certain commercial accomplishments to validate who you are. And I always say, quantity does not define quality.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you got 15,000 motherfuckers coming seeing you and there's only 400 coming to see me, I never take it that you're a better comedian than
yeah,
I am.
It is right there.
It's just that more motherfuckers know about you than they know about me.
Right.
I never put that. So when people come to me and say, you should be here and there, had I had the success that's happening for me now and the things that come for me early in my career, I wouldn't be here today.
Okay, okay.
Because the mental thing that you need from me personally.
Okay.
I needed what the experience for it. And I enjoyed the ride, man. Being Black famous. And another thing that is really is, I always felt the greatest when I was always performing for our people. I mean, my people, I feel we are mental health warriors. They come have a hard day, hard week, and they come in that motherfucker, have a drink, we swing and laugh their ass off. Give them a different perspective, bro. And we are on the front line. We right below the preachers. We give them that what they need, man, for the laugh to go on. And that is success more than anything. I personally think that we as comedians, especially Black comedians, don't know how many motherfucking homes we kept together, how many murders we prevented, giving different perspective. I was gonna fuck you up, but man, seen Pierre, and I'm laughing my ass. I'm gonna give a different. Listen, I ain't even gonna fuck with you. I'm good. You understand? You cannot devalue that. And some people need a TV show to validate that. Mine's is knowing what I did for my people.
Nice.
And that's the 90% of the people that come see me of coming and performing for them and bringing that laughter to them. That made me successful.
Okay, well, I don't know if it's the same question in a different way, but do you ever feel you overlooked? Do you ever think you've been overlooked at all?
I put it this way. Until Dave came, no one ever extended an opportunity.
Okay.
Because the only difference between every comedian who, quote, is successful is a person that had an opportunity that they cashed in on. That's
okay.
It.
Okay.
They had an opportunity that they cashed in on. And cashing in on that opportunity allowed them to get more opportunities.
Well, then do you blame yourself for not cashing in on opportunity? Like you said, you had that reading in front of those people and you didn't do well, so maybe them other comics would have done well and that's why they moved on and you didn't.
No, because that ain't what, you can't, again, can't give a opportunity and you don't make that one and another opportunity don't come. A lot of people could have did what Dave did before. Dave said, hey, I'm going to use my weight as me being Dave Chappelle, and I'm going to highlight you and bring the people who love me to say, yeah, I know you love me, but look at him. That opportunity was all there. But you have some comedians get to that level and get in that motherfucker and close the window, and they say, you know anybody else funny? Nah, all them niggas died. I'm the only nigga.
Hell no.
Ain't such thing as another funny motherfucker. Mine. Or they employ comedians that they know don't have a shot.
Wow, okay. Now, let's talk about this legendary, this special on Netflix called Legendary, which everyone's talking about. You know, you've towed up. I feel, again, I'm outside looking in, that this was almost like, the way you approached it was like a do or die situation. Like, this was your chance. If you don't hit this one, man, you may be relegated to whatever level you want and not the next level, because I feel like you're on the next level. Am I correct? Did you bring that heat in there for that situation?
Well, I understand the severity of this opportunity and what it was. And of course, I knew if I did just play the way I play, you know, it would do well. Okay. And thank God that it did. But listen, once I got the call, I knew that right here, this is the shot. This is the fucking shot.
You act like it.
You got that right.
You act like it, man. You came out blazing, brother.
Man, it was the shot. And you know, I took every obstacle that was there. I shot it at home.
Yep. Shout out to DC Bethesda.
I stayed around my people. I didn't isolate myself. Because you think of that, everybody touching you and everything. Because I'm a comic. When I go, man, I go and nobody else is with me. It's time to get on stage. I go do my, so I want to do it at home. And I don't give a fuck who's there. You're not going to break my focus. You know what I'm saying? I don't care who, family members, whatever, ain't going to break. And the only thing, I had one objective. Just do you. And I can live with the results. And that's what, I wasn't trying to impress nobody. Let's do you.
Well, let me tell you, I've seen you many times, and I felt like you were just being Earthquake. I've seen you be that funny before, brother. That ain't nothing. It wasn't surprising to me. People go, oh my God, Earthquake. Like, nigga, that's what he normally does. And I'm not kissing your ass. I'm being honest with you. I've seen you, motherfucker. I'm like, that's what Earthquake does. I've been around him before. It just happened to be Dave Chappelle.
Documented.
Put you exactly on Netflix.
Documented.
See it. You know what I'm saying? On a big picture. I think that was what it was like. Damn. You know, like this man is, you know, this is finally his coming out part. White folks probably got to know you a lot better than they had before, right?
Oh, it's it. And let me tell you, man, I always do metaphors. And what you said is so true. All my people, especially my fans, see my thing and say, this is what Earthquake been doing the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And metaphorically, I took it as, it's like a shock in an aquarium.
Okay.
Motherfucker, people come say, that's a great right shot. That motherfucker, he's a man killer. And then they leave. That's what I'm saying about my stand-up. People come see me, ain't funny than the motherfucker. Mm-hmm. I could be on the show with all and kill all these niggas.
Mm-hmm.
But it had no residual effect other than that night.
Come on now, I feel it. I feel you.
No other thing, but he was just the funniest motherfucker at that show.
Right.
Ain't nobody call up or know nothing. Equivalent, metaphorically, like, we came to see that shot. What Dave did is, I'm gonna go in that aquarium, take that shark out, and put him in the ocean.
Right.
Now everybody seen him. And that's what he did. He's like, no, I'm not gonna lie. I'm gonna show you what he is for the world to see. And I'm not gonna leave him in an aquarium. I'm putting in a shark, this great white, in this fucking ocean. And we went and ate up all them guppies that was in front of us.
Watch your mouth, man.
And
watch
the rest
your mouth.
Of them ate their ass up. And now motherfuckers like, damn, there's a great white in this ocean.
Right.
The fans that he's been a great white.
Right.
Other people, I didn't know a great white exists. Right, right. But everybody, the other peers, said, nah, he's been a great white. And metaphorically, that's how I see it.
Man, I got to give a shout out to Dave for doing that, man, for reaching back. Because there's people on his level that could have been done that for us,
man,
for people,
done it.
And didn't do it. So I've always seen him as a humble guy. I'm always a big fan of his, man. I really am. How did he get to you? Like, out of all, you know, I know you got a couple other comics, but how did he make you the first one?
Well,
you know, knew each other?
We knew each other because I owned a club and I booked him. Gary and I booked at the club and we was paying so much money more than we paid any of these motherfucking comedians. I was like, I got to go see, who is this motherfucker?
Mm.
And then that's when I found out he was Baby Jesus. And he was right. Our LeBron.
Right.
Motherfucker was gifted. And I picked him up, took him to all the press. I never took other comedians to their press run unless we was friends. And I didn't know him, and I sit him on, and I took him. And then when I brung him on stage, and I saw his shit, I was like, okay, this motherfucker's the real deal.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
He came up with this joke that, I mean, how did they come up with the word nigger?
Come on, man. Oh, come on, that was classic.
He told me he wrote that joke that week to do it at the club.
No, really?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a legendary joke.
Oh, man, that bit is so, if you can find it, it's one of the best. See, a certain comedian you wrote like, what the fuck, nigga? How did I miss that one? The shit was so brilliant. So we had knew each other that whole time. So I got a call from my agent. And they said, the president of Netflix want to know, can they get your number? They want to give it to Dave. Dave want to call you. And they just did a verbal agreement to shoot your special on Netflix.
Woo!
I thought they was trying to punk me when I'm drunk.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, get a nigga the number. I don't give a fuck.
Right.
About 10 minutes later, hey, man, this is Dave Chappelle. Listen to me. Give me the honor to produce your special, whatever. I said, yeah, hell yeah. And then he got me paid.
Nice.
And he got me paid.
Nice.
And we did it, man. And it was so, that's why I say it's God's time. Because when we shot it, it was just lifting the mask mandate up at the time. And then after I shot it, the new variant came and he shut it back down.
Mm-hmm.
And we shot the first one. He was like, man, you can do whatever you want to do on the second movie.
Well,
got it on the first one.
Well, here's a beautiful thing. He, I'm going to say, not really, but he put his neck out on the line for you. and you delivered.
Yes.
What a combination.
Yes.
And you were the first one that came out.
Yes.
So you making it tough for all the other niggas. Dave called me, nigga. I'm ready to rock some shit, nigga. I got some shit. But no, you know what I'm saying? It's a beautiful thing, man. And I like the fact that we at that level with you. You know, you put that thing out there, man. So I'm happy for him. So his first time, his first foray into producing a special that wasn't his, was magnificent, was legendary. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, your life
has
changed.
Shout out to Stan Lathan.
Yes.
Ricky, all the team, man, that put that together because they shot it was so beautiful. They put it together and it was awesome. And I knew after I did the show that,
it was going to change.
Oh, it's.
Who's some of your new friends? Who's some of your fresh celebrity friends? Yeah, come on, who your celebrity friend? Who you hanging out with now?
I got a lot of them now.
You out with Bron now?
Me and LeBron used to be friends a long time
ago.
Yes, man. When LeBron, I used to fuck with LeBron his first 5 or 6 years of his career. Hard, man. Going, meeting at the club and that kind of shit. Meeting him in Miami. Mm-hmm. And then we just different on the different number.
Right.
And but LeBron is always on the time. But yeah, I got a lot of friends now.
You got a lot of friends.
Oh, man. I got a lot of nigga. But
nigga, why not? Because you're a good dude. You're a cool dude. You funny and shit. You on top of shit. You know, it's a beautiful. I fucked with you a long time ago.
Yes, we did.
You know, that's why you're here today, motherfucker.
What?
Okay, fuck that. I ain't meet you 2 weeks ago when a special came out, nigga. Whatever it came.
Right.
Fuck that. We go history, man.
But
no.
You made me brothers, man.
Nah, man. I love it. I love it, man. So let me ask you, I guess you said it. I'm gonna say, what would you be the perfect position you could be in now, but you wanna be here? What are you, what are we looking for you, man?
Well, I'm gonna do a TV show, of course.
What?
Yeah,
sitcom?
I'm gonna do a sitcom.
Oh,
shit.
I'm gonna do
some movies.
Okay.
When I find the write off. But I'm also gonna prepare, I'm going for my first time ever. I'm going on tour, my tour. It's called Legendary.
Nice.
Me, Donnell Rawlins, we're doing 20 cities.
Okay.
My tour. You know, a lot of motherfuckers say they on tour and you see the shit. Yeah, I'm at the Tampa Improv. Nigga, that's a date. That is not a tour. That is not a tour.
No, I know. You're right.
Tour is when you and that other person have consecutive dates at the same people with different cities. That is a tour. So it's the first time in my career.
You and Donnell?
We're gonna put a lady on and the rest of it.
Man, if you ever need another guy, holler at your boy.
You know what I mean?
I come at a good price.
Yeah.
And if you don't give me, I still love you, nigga.
I don't give a fuck.
You know what I'm saying? It don't matter about this nigga, you know what I'm saying?
And we also I have my show on Sirius XM off Kevin Hart Laugh Out Loud called Quake's House.
I've been there a couple times. I loved it.
Also host and take those comedians on tour.
Good for you.
And then when we get finished at the four that get the highest ratings, mm-hmm. whatever on thing of we're gonna film a Def Jam type special for them
for
me home. Call the house and Quake House comedians.
You doing the same thing, you reaching back too.
Always.
Now let me tell you.
Always.
What I do sometimes on social media is I go in deep. I do a thing called IG creeping.
Right.
That means I go into my brother's IG. I get my crew to go into my brother's IG page. You know what I'm saying? See what you're really about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I don't follow you all the time, but I said, let me find out what you've been up to lately.
Right.
You've been up to some shit on social media. You know what I mean? I mean, you're getting your shit. Things are changing for you, brother.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit?
Just a little bit.
All right. Yeah. Well, let me pull up something. Let me show you something, man. Do you recall this right here, nigga? This is how you get ready for shows, nigga, in the green room, nigga? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know.
I mean, this is
that's
what you
how
do.
We ready to get to work. You know what I mean?
You got the bracelet popping. I think
yeah,
this, right? You
yeah,
got the new shoes
ball,
and shit.
Yeah,
I mean, they made no regular ass Nikes, motherfucker.
No,
okay,
red
nigga.
Bottoms, right?
Woo!
Yeah, them little red bottoms.
Little something.
Chris Louis Vuitton.
Okay, I look my man fresh
bit.
To death in a sweatsuit, make a sweatsuit look nice.
No, well, you know, on Sunday, casual.
Is that what it is? Is that what it's casual?
Casual Sunday.
All right. Well, what about this look? Let me look at this. What's that right there?
Oh, that's
God damn.
Got it. That was the picture after
the special.
Yeah, after the special.
Wow.
Like, okay.
I've been there before, but there's a Cinema Draft House, right?
Yes.
That's them, right? I think my name's up there on the wall somewhere. Yeah, brother.
Yeah.
What made you choose that place?
Black Home.
Okay.
I went there to see Joe Clare do a comedy show, and it gave me that Harlem Nights.
I felt the same way when I looked at it.
I felt the
same way.
And I was like, if I do a special, man, I'm going to do it there. And he called me. He was like, "Where you want to do it at?" I said, "Man, fuck it, let's go home and let's pick this place."
Nice. Like
Constitution Hall. Let's go wherever we want to go on to. And then they came, and Stan Lathan came, and he said, "Nah, this is perfect.
Yeah,
the way I can shoot it quick." I said, "Man, you done won 4-5. I mean, how many Emmys?
Emmys,
you got?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Fuck
oh,
that, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You said, who am I?
Right,
said,
right, right. Nah, I'll tell you what it
needed to be. Yeah, and that was.
All right, what else we got? Let me see. We, you know, we do a little thing right there. Look, boy, look what your boy had that hair back there. You was young. Look at you smiling from ear to ear. Yeah. Boy, look at you. You like look like new money. What was this picture, man? Like
hey, 90, man, that was that was early, man. That was my first special. And you see, I named about goddamn time.
I know that's right.
They gave me a special.
Now this one could be also about. Well, now it's legendary. Now it could also be called about
that. Yeah, that's what they.
Damn, look at you, man! Come on,
smiling.
Man. And a little mustache.
Daddy was in love with a woman.
What? You thought you were in love? You thought you loved somebody?
I was in love, boy.
Hell no!
You didn't tell me nothing, man.
You always had a DC swag. Look at the leather, the watch, and everything.
Yeah.
We got another picture on, man. That's it right there. But that's cool. But here, let me ask you. And they didn't ask me. I'm glad that y'all, I have two friends. Mm-hmm. You're one. Mm-hmm. And John is my other one over at Comedy Hype. I'm glad y'all squashed whatever y'all had.
Mm-hmm.
I even got on him about the situation, mm-hmm. brother. Trust me. You know what I'm saying? I fight for the comics. You know, he ain't in the comedy world like I am. That's
right.
Why he has me on the show. I'm glad that y'all decided to do a peaceful thing. I was not surprised, but a lot of people was on your side, brother. They were, God damn, man. I was like, holy shit, you know. But it was weird because it wasn't on when Richard Pryor's cousin or son, whatever, bodyguard or somebody else was talking about something that had nothing to do with comedy. Then he did you, which, you know, your girl, well, that had nothing to do, your ex.
My
had
ex-wife.
Nothing to do with your ex-wife, okay, ex-wife, right. But I'm just glad that he felt that he understood. He felt like, okay, I didn't know I was doing something wrong. Like, well, there's certain things that, you know, we as comics hold, you know, that we don't want to, let us talk about it. You know, certain things, you know, you get, everything ain't free game and shit like that.
Well, I mean, if he did or he didn't, and I try to, like I told him, man, you know, he tells me that I was inspirational for him having this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I, you know, his page, Comedy Hype, the thing, saying. I said, well, you interviewed her and you never interviewed me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to know about me, there's other people that you could have asked that gave you a non-biased opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, man, I'm from Southeast DC. Talking to you is always the first option.
There you go.
Hey, man, I ain't like what you did. Tell me your point, we're going to sit here and talk it out. We either going to agree or we're going to agree that we disagree.
There you go.
But the first thing or anything else is not, like I told him, I knew eventually we was going to talk about it.
Right.
We were going to sit, it was going to be it was going to be a position for us to talk about. And we sat down and I told him, and like I tell you now, I held no ill will against him and never will. He's a black man, he's a brother, he has a platform. That he do great things for people that's in my genre. I will never, ever, ever even try to diminish that because people need this. We need this.
Yes.
Comedians need this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just was saying you shouldn't do it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't have did it in the past. And this is why I think you should. And you tell me as and we came to meet the mind and it's over.
Good. It's done.
You know, we can hang, we can ears, we can cool. I never said nothing ill about him. I didn't get on social media.
You didn't have to. Shit, other niggas got on him.
Yeah.
I was like, damn. You know, I was surprised, to be honest with you. And until I sit back and understood, you know, the severity of it, you know, like, why are we going that route? And I think he's learned his lesson. And he just said, hey, you know, I made the mistake I made, you know, and let me keep it on comedy. And, you know,
not only him. But all people gotta understand, such as this platform right here, you earned this platform.
Thank you.
You earned this to be sitting here with your own podcast to earn it. Somebody that's sitting here should be equally yoke of earning it. That's all I'm saying. She never told a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand. I thought this was about comedy.
Right.
So, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I don't understand what does my ex-wife contribute to comedy?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's all I said to him, and we worked it out there. Good. It had no relevance.
Good. No, that's good. That's good, man. That's good.
You know what I mean? Yeah, cool.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, it's just wild when you hear people's comments. How do you handle? How do you handle negative comments, you know, that you see?
I don't read them.
You don't read none of your comments?
I had to get on my people today when them sent me something from somebody like, who's this? Mm-hmm. Say, nobody. I said, well, why are you sending it
to me? There you go. There you go.
I mean, because, listen, man, the great thing about being a comic is the occupational hazard is we deal with hecklers.
Sure.
You don't care what a heckler say about you.
Right.
So I see all negative comments as hecklers.
Mm.
I pay you no mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to read you because I don't go and read your comments because you don't know me.
Okay.
You can't insult me unless you know me.
Right.
I don't give you the power that your words carry any weight with me. Because I really don't give a fuck what you think. Because you can't tell me about me. Now, if you want to come and ask me why I said that, I will give you why I said or whatever I said or whatever I did, and we will sit here and have this conversation. But you're not just going to sit here and criticize my life without you exposing yours.
There it is, boy. There it is.
I ain't no going to sit here and like, wait, you shouldn't have said this. Well, motherfucker, what did you say?
Right.
See, I don't give a fuck what you said.
Ooh.
So I won't be over there to comment on what you said.
Nice.
Because I know I'm not in a position to criticize you. That is not my role in life. Because there's only one person that you are here to live up to their expectation, and that's God. Mm. Everybody else is optional. And I take the option not to give a fuck.
There you go.
I don't give a fuck. Mm. I mean, so I don't read it. I don't get into it. Some people that I hear shit of, I love to debate and say, if you feel this way, then I'm gonna throw you this. And what about this off of it? But when you just sit here and tell me what I shouldn't have said or how I should have did it, it ain't in my shoes. You don't know the circumstance, nor did you ask me why I did it. You form your own opinion. Since you form your own opinion, you already disqualified yourself from me. I ain't listening to you.
Wow.
Okay. I ain't listening to you at all. You can go fuck with somebody else. Talk to your woman. That's who the motherfucker that needs to hear your point of view. I don't need your half on my rent for my standard of living.
Damn. Well, that's that. Yeah. I like that. And on that note, let's find some. I got a thing. I spin a wheel. I give my guest a chance to spin this wheel. And whatever it falls on, you got to play the game, brother. You in Hollywood, so nigga, you know the game.
God damn it, the game.
The game's all over the place and shit. All right, so up here we have some different things that it lands on you may have to discuss. Like, let me think. Wanted to say a celebrity crush call. If it falls on that, you got to call up somebody you had a crush on. And I'm a director. You're acting. This is an acting role. I know you have a woman. Just say you were acting. I pick up somebody and I pick on the phone and ask that how you lost your virginity. If you remember that far back,
you know
what I'm saying? Okay.
I remember.
If you one got to go, either her teeth, her face, or her booty. The one you say you can live without. Find out which one that. Ooh, I'm gonna see where you at, where your loyalty falls at, nigga. Who you would change places with and why? The biggest lie you ever told. So any one of them stories you just told me. Would work, nigga. Let me do that again. something you wanna get off your chest. You know, what's that? You know, and the biggest secret. So will you spin it? Give him a drum roll, everybody give him a spin. And give it a DC spin. And let's see where it falls at. Spin that stuff like a DC spin. There you go.
Face. Teeth or booty? Which one?
So now you have a girl.
Yes.
You got to be with her. You got to marry. This woman, you got to marry.
Yes.
Okay, this is your married woman. You ain't no other choice.
Yes.
And whatever you say you don't want, I mean, you can live without, you can't change it. You can't say, well, I'll get it fixed another time.
Nah, I got it.
Either her teeth,
mm-hmm.
like teeth a lot, or you say, got a, or booty. She can be a flat, I mean, look like she was laying on the floor all her life and shit, you know what I'm saying? Or she got a cute face.
Okay.
Which one can you say I can live without?
The teeth.
So she got raggedy ass teeth?
God damn it, I don't want to have no teeth.
What, she can be fine as hell and nice booty with no fucked up teeth?
That's a potential throat goat. You understand?
Damn.
We can work. You understand? No teeth, no distractions, no
nice.
Nothing in there. Nothing but gumming me all day long.
So you just want to know what that mouth would do.
Oh, that mouth going, ain't nothing else can do.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing in the way.
Hell no.
No teeth.
Okay.
That's a potential throat go.
Okay, so you need the face and you need the booty.
Come on, man.
You need to face it.
That's a blessing.
So you just take
fine
mouth
face,
shut.
Big ass,
right.
No teeth.
Woo!
God damn it, shit.
She got tattooed.
What day we getting married?
No.
No
damn.
Teeth in the way?
Damn.
Come on, nigga. Straight in there. I don't want you getting no dentures.
Ooh, wait.
I ain't going to fix them up.
Ooh.
We can't afford it.
I'm going to think about that. You know what? I would say face. She could be ugly as a motherfucker. She look like you in the face, nigga. She got straight teeth and a booty. I think I'd deal with it.
No, man.
Yeah,
I was
like,
damn,
ain't you Earthquake sister?
No.
Quakeetta?
No.
Quakeetta?
No.
No, the teeth.
Teeth.
The teeth can go.
Teeth
can go. Man, the fact I appreciate you coming, what we do is we have a swag bag for our guests.
Oh, look at
God. I got a bag here of goodies. Everything in here is made by black persons, black product up in here, okay?
Okay.
So you put it out, you read it, you see it, give a shout out to the black people, whoever wrote it.
There
it is. That's how my guests, I like to give my guests something. Listen, what we got first?
God
what's
damn.
First? Pull out this boy. Whatever you gonna pull out first. What it is? Yeah, what it is. That's
you
the camera right
see
there.
You something on here, what I got
yeah,
on
pull out. Okay,
of course,
first.
The man gonna pull out a book.
What's that say?
My 100 homies and phonies. Hollywood.
Of Hollywood. Okay. I wrote a book called My 100 Homies and Phonies of Hollywood. That's all the celebrities I met, the 100 celebrities I met. Who was cool, who wasn't shit. I believe you in that page, you in that book, brother.
Don't sit
okay, okay,
see.
Okay, okay, that's one. What else we got in there?
What's
there? Coffee. That's
coffee.
You drink coffee? Coffee,
yeah,
brother.
I use this when I'm moving my drugs.
Yo, hell no.
Yeah.
You know that's from Tabby Boney. Remember the DC rapper?
Yeah.
Yeah, his family makes coffee, man.
What?
You know Tabby Boney, you remember that?
Yeah, I know
yeah,
Tabby
put it
Boney.
In the pocket. Remember that
oh,
put it in the
really?
Pocket?
I'm putting it in the pocket.
Yeah.
That's that pocket.
Yeah, there it is right there. Yeah, yeah. That's family made. That's family made. Come on, what else
okay,
we got today? What do we got?
What's this card?
I don't know. Maybe his card for the
oh, his
product.
Card.
Okay,
it's
yeah,
extra
okay.
Shit.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, a t-shirt.
Okay, let's see what size. Yeah, I hope they're yeah. What?
Oh,
official,
yeah.
Brother.
Oh, official. P.L.'s Panic
Room, yes.
The Panic that. Room is in here.
It's extra large. Okay. You fit there, right?
Yeah,
you fit
extra large. Yeah, you know what it is.
That
extra
large,
we can get it in there.
There's something else
get
in there.
Two men. I mean,
yeah.
They might have got in my bag. I think I ain't got shit else.
Well, hold on, man. Now, there better be something else in there.
Somebody in there came yeah. In and got
what
me.
Oh, pull that out there. Pull that. What's
put
in there?
This right here, the
pull
bracelet.
Look what it says. The name is somebody. Oh, somebody made that for you specifically, brother.
Oh, man.
It ain't no junky ass bracelet either. That's a real bracelet, brother. We don't do that.
God damn it, man.
Okay, who's that? What is that say? On the back
I
of it, tell you.
I got my glasses on it.
Oh, shit, you blind
on
to mine.
Earthquake, thank you for the support. I am grateful for your business.
Oh, well, okay. Well, the business, okay. I gave you the business. Her name is Celestial Goddess.
Okay.
Sister, brother. Look at that brain. What? Look at that boy looking good. Boy looking bang, 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 bang. Earthquake was in his
house.
There it is.
Come
what?
On over here and put this bracelet somewhere, man.
Oh, well, damn. Okay. Okay. She might. She just might, man.
Yeah.
Hey, Quake, thank you so much for coming down, man, to my
well,
little
thank you,
my L.A. version of P.S. Panic Room, man. I love you like a brother, man. I really mean that. And I really mean that, man. I really, really mean that. I appreciate you coming, man. I'm just surprised when my guests come through. But you, brother, I was like, man, I want Quake, man. And you're at your hottest now. You didn't have to come, brother. You did not have to come. You could have, you know, gave me the brush off, but you came, man. And you supported me. And I think that's testament of who you are as a man, really, as a person, man. You said you're coming, and you were coming, and you came, and you did it.
My man.
Come on, brother. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Home, I love you, man.
Same here.
And the best of that, and you know, it's the joint, man. Anything you do.
That's your camera right there. Tell me where they can get you at, reach you at right there.
Bro. Hey, listen, this is your boy, Earthquake. You can follow me on Instagram at The Real Earthquake, and also listen to me on SiriusXM on Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud, Quake House, 1 to 3 Pacific, 4 to 6 Eastern Standard Time.
There it is.
Come see it.
There it is. Yo, another crushing episode of P.S. Panic Room, L.A. We did it in L.A. right here. Thank y'all for supporting, man. If you like the show, man, hit the notification bell or the subscribe button, man. Hit it up, man. Let's do this again, man. I appreciate y'all, man. Every week we got a fire-ass guest, and this was no different, man. Thank y'all for checking out, man, and we'll see you later, man. Holla.
you like that show, like, subscribe, and comment below. You know, hit the notification bell. Hit the subscribe button, man. We want you around. Appreciate it.